I'm Steve Kraske, and this is KCUR's Up to Date. You've probably driven past sex trafficking hubs before and not even known it, when one Overland Park couple realized that they felt obligated to try to end the practice in their own backyard. Today we'll meet that couple, the Jensens, and learn what their battle against trafficking looks like. We'll also learn what warning signs to look for if you spot a shady massage parlor. Then, Tiny Edgerton, Kansas became a national distribution hub 6 years ago and has seen an influx of people coming there to work every day. We'll learn how the Johnson County town is trying to keep up with the demands of more and more workers. We'll get you up to date after this hour's news. Here's one thing you should know about sex trafficking in suburban Kansas City. It's way more common than you probably think it is. Another thing you should know, Mike and Pam Jensen of Olathe are out to stop it. In fact, the couple are relying on their experience in activism, their tenacity, and the hope that cooperation between law enforcement agencies and advocacy groups will lead to sharp reductions in a business that often relies on human trafficking to survive. Joining us on a talk about their commitment to this cause are the Jensens. Mike, welcome. Nice to have you here.
Thank you, Steve.
Pam, good to have you too. Good morning.
Good morning.
Pam, why are you guys so committed to this? I mean, you could be spending your time on all manner of causes. Why this one?
Well, it's right under our nose. It's mm-hmm. like all over. And I think for me, at one point, I just realized I am not being a responsible citizen of my county, of my city, by just pretending like it's not there.
Yeah. Mike, how about you?
Well, I would say the same thing. They have a veneer of legitimacy, so we drive by them every day, and we had no idea what was going on inside. So once Pam started to investigate and dig, it changed everything.
Yeah. You know, I think the two of you have something of a personal connection here through the missionary work that you've done in Nepal. Pam, tell us about that.
Well, we go over there about once a year, mm-hmm. and we aren't directly related at this point. We're looking this fall. We're heading over there in a couple of weeks, and we're hoping to get a little bit more involved, go, you know, visit some strategic places and mm-hmm. people.
And the concern here is what, that people from that country, women, are being trafficked, or what are we talking about here?
Well, there are just, there's a particular area where there it's kind of just the main transport line of, you know, over the borders. Mm-hmm. And my heart is for just what I've learned about the, you know, the young girls in villages and that sort of thing. And it's just everywhere. It's not just Nepal. Mm-hmm. It's all over, you know, Eastern Asia.
So, Mike, what are you guys doing to fight this?
Well, it's a multifaceted problem, and it took us a while to find our lane. But I believe our lane, we have a 501c4, it's called Concerned Citizens for Responsible Government. Mm-hmm. And we feel like our lane is to support all the people that have been doing the work for a long time. We're actually relatively new to the work, mm-hmm. but there's many incredible organizations that have been doing this a long time. So we support them. One of the key things that we do, we're active politically in raising money for an electronic campaign for two laws that are coming before the Senate.
This is the U.S. Senate or the Kansas Senate?
Kansas. Mm-hmm. And they're about vacature and expungement. One of the biggest problems in sex trafficking right now that allows it to keep increasing is that we treat the victims like criminals, and the criminals we leave alone. Mm-hmm. So if you didn't have demand, there wouldn't be a business. I'm a businessman, and if I don't have a customer base, I'm out of business.
How do we treat the victims like criminals? What is that connection?
Well, we treat them like prostitutes. They're mm-hmm. low-hanging fruit. So, you know, you can go in and, you know, arrest a couple girls. They're back on the street, and you really haven't done anything to restore them or to get them out of that lifestyle. You know, every our experience with survivor leaders is that every one of them did not choose this. It chose them. Mm-hmm. There was an exploitation of a vulnerability in their life, and they found themselves in a situation where their options were reduced down to this, and it became a survival lifestyle. Mm-hmm. You know, they didn't have a chance to go to UMKC and get a law degree and mm-hmm. then, apply for jobs.
Pam, are you guys focused exclusively on Johnson County?
Well, gosh, for now, we are. I mean, it's definitely a nationwide issue. And Right. They're actually, kind of the different facets. When you say sex trafficking, that's a very broad, mm-hmm. So, I mean, my first initial concern was the illicit massage parlors, mm-hmm. specifically. But as I began to educate myself and meet people and attend events, and, I've learned so much just all across the board. So, honestly, at this point, I'm just still trying to figure out where I'm supposed to be in all this.
And the two of you have other jobs, right? What else do you do?
I am a full-time wife, mother, mm-hmm. grandmother. Mm-hmm. I've been stay-at-home mom for years, and I do not get up and go to a job every day, but I keep busy.
Mike, what do you do?
Business owner.
Oh. Yeah. Pam, Roxy Hamill of the Shawnee Mission Post had a good article that details your fight. It was interesting to me. She began that story by talking about the drive she took with you to a series of Johnson County strip malls and highlighting the types of things you look for in your efforts, to stop sex trafficking. What kind of things do you look for? What kind of signs should we all be looking for when it comes to spotting sex trafficking?
Well, are you asking specifically concerning the massage businesses?
I guess the whole thing. Maybe you can walk us through a couple of different scenarios.
Yeah, that's a big... So for me, I feel like... Because once you know what you're looking for as far as an illicit massage business... they're pretty easy to spot, and you see them everywhere. So mm-hmm. if you're looking for that in particular, it's going to be businesses that are open 7 days a week. You'll see the sign 10 to 10, 10 a.m., 10 p.m. They have typically reduced prices. Their advertised prices are significantly lower than regular massage therapy. The windows are covered. A lot of the just standard photo coverings over their windows. Typically, a lot of them don't even have a name. It'll just say massage. Mm-hmm. Some of them even put Asian in their name. I've made friends with neighboring business owners, and they never see any employees come or go. Mm-hmm. So it's pretty good indication that whoever is working in those is living there. Right. So all kinds of things that when you know what you're looking for, it's easy to see.
What else should we be looking for?
Well, there's a lot of male traffic, and what we've observed is a lot of county plates, even out mm-hmm. of state plates, Oklahoma, Missouri, Nebraska.
Wow.
They typically don't park right in front of the business. They'll park a parking lot over, sit and smoke a cigarette, sometimes nervously, then get mm-hmm. out with sunglasses on, walk in, and they come back out 15 minutes later.
Mm-hmm.
So,
if you guys can spot them, why can't the police spot them and shut these things down?
Well, I believe the police are spotting them, and we work very closely with the police, and that's began in the last year. And we believe police are overtaxed, undermanned, and so that's a place where that's the other place where we're involved. We can all be the eyes and pass information on to our police forces.
So when you pass the information on, Mike, are you getting the kind of response from law enforcement that you hope to get?
I would say yes. I would say no one's in favor of this. And, what's been in the news with Jeffrey Epstein and Bob Kraft has really mm-hmm. raised the awareness, in the public eye, that this just is not okay on any level. It's just not okay for one human to own another one and then sell them multiple times a day.
Yeah.
So I would say the answer is yes. Law enforcement is very interested in seeing this go away.
Pam, where do these types of businesses tend to pop up?
Oh, typically in just strip malls.
Mm-hmm.
So they're next door to nail salons or hair salons, restaurants. Just the strip malls is where I see them.
If you see one, then you're suspicious of what a certain business might be. What should a citizen do? What's the next step?
Well, I think that if more of us, I think there's just this cultural mindset that, you know, you either see it and are clueless and don't have any idea what it is, or you drive by and you think, oh, that looks kind of sketch, but what can I do?
Mm-hmm.
So I think that just we, you know, everyone, I mean, just awareness of it, and then just telling somebody about it, and then just not being okay with it, you know. So as far as
what do you call the police? Do you? I mean, that. What does that get me? I mean, what? I mean, do I call the police and say, "Hey, this place looks kind of sketchy. I just was walking by."
I think that that's fine to do that, and so because I feel like, you know, even if they are very much aware, which they are, and we are. Just a little side note. I mean, I'm encouraged. I feel like as a whole country that there's momentum going now as far as, you know,
investigations. Human trafficking, absolutely.
Yeah. So not just, you know, with the parlors, but with just our youth, you know, our exploited young people. And so I think making that phone call, I think doing something, mm-hmm. just do something. Tell somebody, learn, get online, go to PolarisProject.org and learn about mm-hmm. the issue. We can all, it's the kind of thing where it can be, look so overwhelming that you think, what can I do?
Mm-hmm.
But if all of us do something,
yeah.
you know, it can make a difference,
yeah.
is what I feel.
You know, if the concern here is that the police go in and they arrest the women for prostitution, but the men are getting off scot-free, how much is being gained?
Yeah.
Well,
question.
Really nothing. The demand is what allows it to continue unabated. You know, I said it earlier. If there's no buyer, there's no business.
Mm-hmm.
So we don't really want the police to go in and just kick the door down and arrest the girls. The long game, the win in the long game is to do the long, hard police work of investigating the network. These are transnational, multi-billion-dollar industries.
But is the Overland Park Police Department set up to do that kind of investigation, Mike?
Well, they're not. But they're not by themselves either. So all
they
the federal agencies,
yeah.
yes, the FBI.
The KBI,
Yeah, the KBI, even Homeland Security, ICE, they're all very aware. We just came back from a symposium in D.C., and all these players are at the table. They all know about it. And without getting into detail, there's all kinds of ways that they can be investigated and shut down, and
mm-hmm.
I believe that by us calling the police, number one, the police can't say, well, nobody cares about this,
right?
Yeah.
Right.
And they can't say it's a victimless crime. That's the other thing. That's a big misconception, that it's two consenting adults, you know. And the truth is that that some girl got promised the American dream, and she got here and found out, and she's now living the American nightmare.
Well, I was just going to say, these folks, in a sense, have been kidnapped. They're being held against their will. I mean, at least that's how I understand it. And so, you know.
Well, it's a little more.
How do we help the women themselves? Yeah. If we're talking about victimization here, you say they're being arrested for prostitution. What do we as a society need to do to help these women?
Well, there's a thing that's called restorative justice.
Okay.
So when a network is taken down, you're going to have victims.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's incumbent upon us, and that's another thing we do in our coalition, is we partner with excellent victim service providers
mm-hmm.
that provide housing, counseling, medical attention, legal attention, immigration help. So all those services, there's excellent services that are available. So the challenge is to get the police to not harvest the low-hanging fruit,
right.
which is the victim, and you know, hey, put a notch on our belt because we arrested somebody that's involved in human trafficking.
Yeah.
You know, the person that needs to be arrested is Bob Craft, Jerry Epstein, the groomers, the people that are grooming these girls and coercing them. There's
right.
always fraud and coercement involved.
Sex trafficking in Johnson County, that's what we're talking about here this morning, and just how common this business is, startlingly common, much more so than most people believe. I'm visiting with Mike and Pam Jensen, who are working on this issue, trying to be more public awareness to it. You know, I want to get back to a point here, Pam, that I hope is not getting lost, which is that one of you has said along the way that there are as many illicit massage businesses in this country, and maybe even in Johnson County, as there are Starbucks. Maybe that gives some context here. Am I seeing that right?
Yeah, that's what, I mean, that's, I haven't personally counted them all, but that's what all of our sources are saying. And that just really puts it in, you're like, wow, I mean, it's quite a vivid picture, isn't it?
Our phone number here, if you want to join our conversation, 816-235-2888, or tweet us at KCUR up to date. Mike, go ahead.
Yeah, I did some research on Starbucks' website. There's 50 Starbucks in the KC metro area, and the last time we had authoritative numbers on IMBs, there were 79.
So IMBs being illicit massage parlors.
Illicit massage businesses. Yeah.
Businesses, okay.
Nationwide, the experts, Polaris, Presidium, say there's 9,500 illicit massage businesses have been identified. There's an average of 3.5 victims in each one. That's almost 35,000 victims. And those are just the ones that have been identified.
Mm-hmm. I was going to say, how many women victims typically are in one of these massage parlors? What if I walked in the door, what would I see?
Estimates 2 to 3, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay.
They move. They get moved a lot. But yeah, typically 2 to 3.
Tell us about this event coming up, Pam. It's called The Big Search. What is The Big Search?
Yeah, I'm so glad you asked, because, you know, we're talking about the massage businesses, and we haven't really touched on a completely different group in our population. That's our young people.
Mm-hmm.
And my heart really goes to that. When I started realizing how sex trafficking is happening so much with our young people. And a lot of times it's a boyfriend. It's a girlfriend, mm-hmm. you know, girls. So that's a whole other issue that we don't have time to talk about today. But The Big Search is coming up. It is an event. This will be our second year. It's October 17th through 19th. Let me just give you the website to go to if you're interested. It's a volunteer opportunity citywide to come, and it's an outreach event to help locate missing young people.
Mm-hmm.
So there's been tons of work already put into it with many, many organizations. And so it's an opportunity to come. Basically, you get trained online. You have to go to the website, do some paperwork, ID, that sort of thing. And then it's an opportunity to come and actually get out into the city. Everyone is given brochures and cards, pictures of specific children
mm-hmm.
going business to business saying, have you seen this? So it's an incredible event. I participated last year.
And you've actually found young people who have been missing.
They had a great result last year. A lot of it happened. It continued even after the event itself. But it's veronicasvoice.org. And if you're interested in doing that, go to that.
Okay.
You sign up online, and I encourage anybody, just have to be 18 or older, but it's a great opportunity.
Mike, where does the line get drawn between, you know, say a legitimate massage business and one that's illegal?
It's where the body's touched.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if there's sexual contact, it's illicit. We've actually talked to a John or a buyer, and he's visited 10 of them over 50 times.
He's visited 10 massage parlors?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
IMBs. And he's never been refused sex out of 50-some visits.
Hmm. You know, you told our producer, Mike, that these massage parlors are the buyer's favorite way to buy sex because it's the least risk. There's plausible deniability and a veneer of legitimacy. Explain that to us.
Well, quite honestly, they just don't have a fear of being caught. They walk mm-hmm. in, and they may feel guilty, but
to get a regular massage.
We didn't do anything. If they hear the door being busted down, you know, you stop your illicit activity, and you deny everything.
Mm-hmm.
So it has It's very complicated taking down these dark networks, and that's really what they are. You can pay with a credit card.
Mm-hmm.
You can pay with a credit card. There's several reasons.
Why would anybody do that? I mean, aren't you just asking for yourself to get in trouble?
What? I just paid for a massage.
Yeah. Okay. Okay.
That's what I do at Massage Envy. It's what I did here, too.
816-235-2888 is our phone number. Let's go to some calls here. Edward from downtown Kansas City. Good morning.
Good morning, Steve. And first, I just wanted to salute the absolutely invaluable journalistic service you provide Kansas City. And I did want to ask your guest today, although I know they are not lawyers, I had paid particular mind to a comment they made earlier in the show, which is that women involved in these situations are often, you know, arrested or treated as criminals as opposed to victims. And I wondered if either of your guests had an opinion as to whether or not there need to be actual changes in the law to allow us to address these situations with the nuance they deserve.
Yeah, Edward, thank you for the nice words. I appreciate it. I think you mentioned a couple law changes that you're working on here, Mike.
Yes, vacature and expungement can actually remove a girl's record that has been coerced, brought into the country under debt bond, and has found her way out. We have situations we're aware of where a girl has survived, been rescued, survived, and she can't even now go to her kid's school activities because she's listed as a sex offender.
Mm-hmm.
We have a girl in Kansas that is in jail for 10 years because she took a girlfriend of hers when she was a minor to a party, and she was trafficked, so they've charged her as a trafficker.
Yeah.
So it's a mess.
Speaking of the law, I read, Pam, that Kansas is one of only four states to not require statewide licenses for massage operators. Would that make much of a difference?
Well, it's not. Let me make sure. So Kansas is one of four states that does not regulate it at the state level.
Okay.
So that puts the responsibility onto each municipality, has its own system of, you know, coding and licensing.
Would statewide regulation help?
That, you know, we had that discussion a number of months ago, and a good friend who's a massage therapist, and honestly, there was kind of pros and cons, and I think that the consensus would be yes.
Right. In the end, it would would be positive to go that way.
Yeah.
As long as
I believe
they were
it
enforced.
Is.
You can have all the statutes you want, and if they're not enforced, they don't do a bit of good. So.
Yeah. What do the operators of these parlors say once they've been arrested? Have you had a chance to talk to them?
No.
I haven't.
Yeah. I bet you'd like to, though. Yeah. Am I right?
Well, I don't know.
Yeah.
Maybe.
So if someone here, again, wants to get connected to an organization, to your organization, how can they do that, Mike? Where would you send them to get engaged here?
Well, our organization is called CC4RG, and we have a website, cc4rg.com.
And what does CC4RG stand for?
Concerned Citizens for Responsible Government.
Okay.
And our start wasn't in sex trafficking. This came up after we gotten started. We started with some other public safety issues.
Mm-hmm.
So we're in the process of constructing a new website right now for that.
Okay.
But they can also email us at ccforgkansas@gmail.com.
And they can get started and try to help out that way then. What would somebody do if they gave you they got in contact with you? How would they engage? What would they do?
Well, when people ask me that.
What do you need help with? Yeah.
I think I would just, there are so many different ways you can get involved, whether it's like on the front end awareness, you can be trained to, you know, talk and give presentations.
Mm-hmm.
There's many places where you can offer help if you just really have a heart for people and want to, support these service providers. There's lots of places that'll take your money, for one thing.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of a tricky thing. Honestly, what I tell people really is if you're just new but you're interested, just educate yourself, learn about it. And I mean, I'm still trying to figure out what I'm supposed to be doing. So it's not an easy, it's just, what would you say to that, Mike? I mean, there are definitely things that people can do, but, you know, I'm not law enforcement, so I can't go in and shut these places down.
Right.
So I'm having to find other creative things that I can do. And part of that is just talking to people and learning. And
how about picketing outside these places?
You know, we have, I have a lot of ideas.
Yeah. Okay.
And it's just a matter of, that's a great question though. It's just a matter of, we want to partner well with all the other entities. And so it's just a tricky thing of coming up with, you know, that balance.
Right.
Of just really pushing through, but also, you know, working well.
That's Mike and Pam Jensen working against sex trafficking in suburban Kansas City, particularly in Johnson County. Thank you both for coming in and sharing your thoughts today. Good luck with your work.
Thank you so much.
When we come back, the explosive growth in Little Edgerton, Kansas. It's not that little farming community any longer. I'm Steve Kraske, and you're listening to Up to Date on 89.3 KCUR. And we're back. I'm Steve Kraske. My newsletter, Kraske Off Mic, gives you insights from me and highlights from the up-to-date team each week. You don't want to miss out. Go to kcur.org/Kraske and subscribe. It's easy. Go to kcur.org/Kraske. Tomorrow on the program, prisons in Missouri and Kansas are struggling, but could a kinder, gentler detention solve any of the woes? We'll learn about how Germany reformed its prison system tomorrow on KCUR's Up to Date. Well, to give you a sense of how quickly Little Edgerton, Kansas is growing, considering that its population nearly triples at the start of each day. Many of those people are heading to work at the city's rapidly expanding Logistics Park, Kansas City, which has drawn $1.1 billion in private investment in recent years from folks like Amazon, UPS, and Hostess. The city needs new restaurants to feed those people, and it needs housing too, and apartments. And not just 30 or 40 new homes, more like several hundred. Now a conversation about how Edgerton's leaders are managing all this rapid growth and what it means for the community. With us once again, Mayor Donald Roberts is here. Mayor, welcome back. Good to have you.
Thanks for bringing us back.
James Altman is the president of Elevate Edgerton. That's a public-private economic development partnership in Edgerton. James, good to have you too.
Glad to be here.
Well, Mayor, are you keeping your head above water these days, or how's it looking?
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, we just keep pushing forward. So it's baby steps. And we just, you know, as long as we keep a forward progress going, you know, we're trying to build an entire city. So we want to build the opportunities that future generations will love and support for the years to come, which includes housing, commercial ventures, and jobs, obviously.
But you're drinking water out of a fire hose every day. Are you able to manage that, or how are you doing?
You know, we got a tremendous staff. You know, adding Elevate Edgerton to the mix, we got a tremendous staff that works hard every day. It's, you know, I don't consider us a typical city. I mean, we're a get it done type place. We don't study things. We do the work and get it done so that we can have the things we really want for the long term.
You know, James, describe for us what Logistics Park, Kansas City looks like and what happens there each day, because that's sort of the nexus for all this attention and development in Edgerton.
Yeah, so Logistics Park, Kansas City, one of the largest, fastest industrial parks in the country right now.
Yeah.
By the end of this year, we'll be at just under 13 million square feet of industrial space built within the last 6 years.
Yeah. What happens there every day?
So you've got your e-fulfillment centers like your Amazons, your Jets. Obviously, Hostess is coming into the mix. You know, you've got partners like Demdaco, Spectrum Brands.
So big warehouses are down there,
exactly,
too.
Exactly.
And there's train traffic every day, right?
There is. The BNSF intermodal facility is kind of the straw that stirs the drink down there, so to speak.
What is an intermodal facility? You hear that phrase, but what does that mean?
So the intermodal facility is these companies are able to ship in their goods by rail. You know, they basically come in from the Pacific Rim countries on the big cargo containers that come in on the ships. When they get into the port of of Long Beach. Basically, they're taken from the ship, put onto the BNSF train out in California at the port of Long Beach, and then those containers are shipped to Edgerton.
And these are what's in the containers? What might they be?
Anything that you buy from Amazon on a daily basis.
Okay, so all the products are coming in to be warehoused and then shipped out at some point then.
Correct. Correct.
How many people are working at that logistics part, Kansas City?
So by the end of the year, we'll have just under 4,500 direct employees between all the different employers that are located out there.
And what's the population of Edgerton these days?
About 1,700.
So that's why I say it triples almost every day with the workforce coming in. What's the biggest challenge, Mayor, that you guys face each day?
So, I mean, really, if you listen to the business community, the number one challenges are healthcare services and available restaurants within the area. I think that's true also.
You need doctor's offices. People get hurt in the job, that kind of thing?
Absolutely. Or even pre-employment screening type services. Mm-hmm. And so that's what we hear from the business community. From the residential community, again, doctor's offices, grocery stores, convenience stores, gas stations. You know, so it's about just those services that we all use every day.
So that's why you say you're trying to build an entire city very, very quickly here. You need a lot of the basics because this was a really small little town not too long ago.
Absolutely. You know, so it's kind of reminiscent of downtown Kansas City, Missouri, when we started building downtown with lofts. We had to get a grocery store, we had to get a gas station so that we could make that a livable area. Mm-hmm. We need the same thing, but we got to get the housing started. So rooftops matter for commercial, so that it'll be supported in grocery stores and we have the employment already for the medical services, but we need a developer that is willing to invest to build the building for those type of services.
I was going to say, so are you finding developers that you need to build the housing? Are you finding someone to build the new restaurant? Where do you stand with all this?
So we do have a couple of developers that we've talked to over the time. I think it's a challenge. We don't have small acreage lots. We have more interest in small 5-10 acre spots. Edgerton is surrounded by farmland, so we have 80 acres and up. It takes a much larger developer than just that early on want to build 30 homes type guy.
Mm-hmm.
And so
you want 300 homes, right? You don't want 30.
Yeah, or 300 homes and, you know, 200 apartments. And yeah, we need to grow it all. And, the unique thing is when we went through the downturn of the economy, we also seen that people would work at a job 3 to 4 years before they decided to move closer to work.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're at that time period now where people want to move to the area, but we don't have the housing stock for them to live near their jobs.
You know, it's funny to me because you think of the needs that you have. And I always think of developers that, you know, someone needs to build some houses. You can more or less snap your fingers and get someone to come down and build those houses because there's people out there who want the work. But apparently it's not that easy, right?
It is not. I mean, and it's really easy for an Overland Park or an Olathe or Lenexa that have had consistent building for years. Edgerton, we had some development before the downturn economy. We haven't had very much since then. But it's also about the labor market. So the labor market and developers after that downturn, less developers, the labor market's really tight. So they're concentrated in areas where they can sell more expensive homes,
mm-hmm.
$450,000 and up. We need homes that are more in the starter category, $250,000 and up.
And you say it's hard everywhere to find those kinds of homes and people to build those homes because what the thinking is, if you're going to spend all the time with bringing people to the job site to build a home, you might as well build a big one because you make more money at it, right?
Absolutely. It's dollars at the end of the day. The infrastructure for a subdivision is the same whether you're building in Edgerton or you're building in Lenexa. That infrastructure cost per lot matters to the overall cost of the home that you build on it, but the profit margin continues to go up as you get bigger.
So what are you thinking about in terms of, are you going to incentivize developers to come to Edgerton? Do you have to do something out of the box to get the development you need to make this thing go?
So from a city perspective, we're willing to talk to the first one that wants to do big residential and talk to them about what incentives so that we can prove the market. Once we prove the market, I don't believe that we have to, in Johnson County, incentivize the market, but we need them to start. So we are interested in having that conversation with the developer that's serious about building homes.
Yeah. I'm just wondering, James, are you sensing frustration amongst the employers down there that things aren't happening fast enough?
I don't know if I would say frustration is the right word, but you know, definitely an eagerness to know how soon things are going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
You know, to Mayor's point, we hear a lot about, you know, how soon it's going to be before we see those, you know, those medical services that can offer the pre-employment type services, the physicals, the drug screenings, you know, urgent cares for when they, you know, get hurt on the job. That way they don't have to ship them up to Olathe or Overland Park. And then, you know, from the restaurant standpoint as well, too, mm-hmm. You know, a good majority of the employees out there get 30-minute lunch breaks. And within a four-mile radius of the logistics park, there's one quick service restaurant. So
how many do you need? Four?
More.
Eight?
Yeah. We would be able to support as many as could build out there. I mean, the logistics park is continuing to grow, and that just puts more and more stress on the need for those type of services.
Are you getting interest from the big franchisees, you know, McDonald's and Hardee's and all that stuff?
We've had discussions with a lot of different opportunities, developers and some of those different organizations. The challenge is nobody likes being the first one, you know, to the,
why is that?
Well, because you've got, you know, there's a lot of cost that goes into being the first one. You've got infrastructure costs. You're trying to prove the market. When you look around to a lot of the development that happens, like in this case, you usually have that anchor tenant that comes in first, you know, your big travel center, for example, mm-hmm. and then, you know, everything else likes to co-locate around that, whether you're talking, you know, restaurants or hotels or, you know, little mm-hmm. strip retail center. So there's the challenge that nobody likes to be the first one. We've had a ton of interest in people that are wanting to know when some of these larger projects are going to start because they would like to look closer at it. But, you know, to Mayor's point, when you've got a 25-acre site, you're not going to have a Burger King come in and take down 1 acre of it and, mm-hmm. you know, put in all the infrastructure just for their one little restaurant.
Oh, interesting. Interesting challenges that Edgerton, Kansas faces trying to grow quickly after years of being a tiny farming community. Our phone number here, 816-235-2888, or tweet us at KCUR up to date. Frank from Lawrence. Frank, you're on the air.
Yes, I'd like to ask your guest, how do you relate to the farmers in the area who must be impacted heavily by this operation? And the second part is, I assume the farmland price is going up with all this development. I'll take your answer off the air. Thanks.
Yeah, thanks. What are you seeing along those terms, James?
Well, to answer the second part first, yeah. You are seeing the price of farmland going up. In fact, a lot of the ground that's available now isn't being marketed as farm ground. It's being marketed as industrial ground or commercial ground or residential ground. So
yeah.
It does have an effect on the cost of that. And I'll let Mayor speak to the point about, you know, how the farmers in the area are kind of reacting to everything.
Yeah. Mayor?
So I think that's mixed. I mean, if you're across the street from this development, you're probably not as happy as a farmer that's down the road. You know, I'll say this to land cost is, when I was a kid, some of this land today I could have bought for $300 an acre
A
young man.
I wish you had, too.
I kind of wish I would have, too, yeah. today. But now some of that land's going for $40,000, $80,000 an acre. So land costs have definitely increased a lot. You know, I'll say this from a city perspective is, you know, we haven't went in and condemned anybody's land. Everybody that is part of this development today has sold on their own free will to a developer that has built. And really, we've we've really recognized that we need to minimize impact between industrial and residential, especially even if it's rural residential. So we take a lot of steps to make sure that we minimize to the best we can the impacts that they see at their home.
I was going to say, how are your longtime residents reacting here? I mean, these are folks who lived in Edgerton at a time when it was, I keep saying the phrase, a tiny farming community. Well, it's not that anymore. It's something very different. And how are you managing that?
You know, I think there's, if you really look at the history, the long-term history of Edgerton. Edgerton was a booming community back in the Depression era or before the Depression era. During the Depression era, we lost our bank and then we slowly dwindled down to what we were before LPKC. And so we're really a rebirth community. We were based on the railroad before Edgerton actually moved to the railroad to be close to it. We're a railroad community today, but we're seeing huge strides forward in our own residential area. You know, we've done park improvements, we've done road improvements, and matter of fact, we're in Edgerton. This may not be a big deal in Kansas City, but in Edgerton, we're doing the largest street recon project that we've ever done.
Largest street what project?
Reconstruction.
Yeah.
So it's about a $4 million project in town, but it takes pretty much a whole area of town or close to a whole area of town and total reconstruction of those streets. Mm-hmm. We've also lowered our mill levy by 30% since I became mayor.
So you've been able to reinvest in the community, and that helps a little bit,
I'm sure. It does. Yeah, with new parks, new roads. We've lowered taxes or the mill levy by 30% since I've been mayor, since we negotiated LPKC. So we're giving money back to our citizens or taking less out of their pocket, and we're really investing back in the community to make it more livable and lovable. And mm-hmm. So one of the top things we see in our citizen survey is about more trails, and mm-hmm. so we work on addition of new trails and sidewalks through our community to make them more walkable. Because of all the work we've done at LPKC, we get to provide things back to our residential area, which makes it a more friendly place to live.
James, what do you want your downtown to be one day? I mean, do you have a vision for what kind of downtown Edgerton, Kansas might one day have?
Well, I mean, I think, you know, Edgerton strives to be, you know, any larger community when it comes to downtown. I mean, there's no reason that, you know, as we get years down the road a little bit, that we can't start to look at doing some of the same things that, you know, Lenexa's doing with their city center area. Mm-hmm. Obviously, we feel that there's going to be the growth that's going to be there. There's going to be, the industrial and the commercial base there to, you know, support the community.
Right.
To Mayor's point, I mean, we're in the very early stages of this kind of rebirth and this rebuild. But I don't think that there's any reason why we don't see a lot of the same community amenities and downtown districts that you're seeing in some of the other metro communities.
Yeah. You know, I'm wondering, Mayor, how you safeguard the future of your community in terms of balancing the need for fast development with, I'm sure, the kind of quality that you want to see built there, whether it's homes, whether it's street reconstructions. You get the feeling from afar, like I am, that there's this big rush thing happening in Edgerton. How are you ensuring that all this is going to be done up to a certain standard that Edgerton will one day be proud of?
So I think that's a very important part for me, is to make it what we want for the long term. I have no intention of investing in things with a partner that is short-term vision. So mm-hmm. if we look at what we've done with industrial, we've done all Class A development, some of the highest quality development. The road infrastructure is some of the best in the nation, allows us to compete with, you know, Chicago, Dallas, Memphis, Columbus, Ohio. Mm-hmm. We've made a focus on making whatever we're doing long-term and making those partnerships long-term and really to work together for that future. Mm-hmm. I'm not interested in I'm going to say Section 8 housing. I mean, I don't think we build that in Edgerton. I want real homes that people will live in and families will grow in for the long term of our community, mm-hmm. and they'll be proud to be part of our community.
How about your schools? What kind of shape are they in? How much need is there there?
So Gardner-Edgerton School District is student population keeps increasing here as of late there. The high school is pretty close to full, but we share that district with Gardner. So that's Gardner-Edgerton, USD 231. But, it's one of the best schools around. Great educational system. Is there going to be a need for more schools? Most certainly, if Gardner grows or Edgerton grows in residential population, we will need additional schools. Edgerton Elementary has been one of the top-ranked elementary schools in the district for as long as I can remember.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think there's a lot of opportunity there for young families to get a great education. And really, as we continue to grow the industrial base side, right, we also offset the taxes, so the cost mm-hmm. back to that resident isn't as bad.
James, how much concern do you have about relying too much on Logistics Park? I mean, nothing's forever in this world. You're going to be getting so much of your revenue from that one facility. Might you become too reliant on it?
Well, it's never good to put all your eggs in one basket, but at the same point, the city of Edgerton has really gotten into this partnership for the long haul. And so this is not a short-term development. This is something that we see continuing to grow for years to come.
20, 30, 40 years?
Absolutely. I mean, just with the proximity of where Edgerton is in the Kansas City metro in relation to the rest of the United States.
And the investment that's been made by so many of these companies,
correct.
Right?
And just the shopping habits of people. You know, more and more people are buying more and more things online every day. And with the, you know, standardization, I guess you would say, of two-day shipping, you know, kind of the Amazon effect, and now even going to one-day shipping, you know, that plays an important part in this. You can reach 85% of the United States population in 2 days by truck from the Kansas City metro. Mm-hmm. So we're positioned well to be, you know, not only to compete for future projects, but also keep the projects that we've already landed here just from a logistical and geographical standpoint.
Right. Is it hard for you these days, Mayor, to identify what Edgerton character is? I mean, what is your town now? It used to be a small farming community. What is it today?
Oh, you know, from a residential perspective, we're still that. I mean, even on the drive up here today, we were talking about we have our own little citizen-run Facebook page, and it's still amazing to me how often our citizens will volunteer to help other citizens. You know, I'm an older person. I need someone to help me move my limbs that fell. And citizens always step up. And so we have a great little community, and the citizen base is what makes that happen. You know, as we grow, I would love to see that trend. And, you know, and as long as, you know, people care about other people, then I think we stay that small town no matter how big we get. Yeah.
I wonder if you guys are getting enough help. I mean, are you getting the outside consultant types who can help you navigate this new world order and as Edgerton seeks to grow as quickly as it is?
Well, to Mayor's point that he made earlier, you know, we obviously, you know, are very cognizant about, you know, who's helping us. You know, there are people all over today that just want to do studies and you know, help consult. And at the end of the day, you get a report that ends up going on your shelf. And
well, you have the Mid-America Regional Council here that can help a community like yours with keeping a certain perspective on things, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, we, you know, everything that we've done in Edgerton has been built on partnership. So even like right now, you know, when you talk about workforce help, you know, Edgerton and Elevate Edgerton, we've got a partnership with Johnson County Workforce Partnership. Mm-hmm. We also have a partnership with Johnson County Community College. We have a learning and career center that's located out at the Logistics Park, you know, in partnership with them, with North Point, with BNSF, you know, everything that we've done, even my organization as Elevate Edgerton, we're a public-private partnership. So it's these private entities that come to the table that are saying, hey, we believe in the future growth of Edgerton and we want to help support that in any way that we can.
That's James Altman, again, president of Elevate Edgerton. We also were joined by Mayor Donald Roberts talking about the explosive growth in Edgerton down in the southwest corner of Johnson County. Gentlemen, good luck. Thanks for coming in and telling us all about it. Appreciate it.
I appreciate it.
You bet.
Thank you.
Tomorrow on the show, some little-known stories that have helped establish an LGBTQ legacy right here in Kansas City and a local archive that's working to preserve that history. You can find and follow us on Twitter. We're at KCUR Up to Date. Follow me at Steve Kraske, and don't forget to like KCUR on Facebook. Our show is produced by Danny Alexander, Luke Martin, Elizabeth Ruiz, and Jamie Hobbs. I'm Steve Kraske, and you are up to date. Thank you.